talking to you about an exquisite plant raised by exquisite animals in an exquisite environment. And this is, Bruno and I think are the only ones, or one of the few who had to fly north to come to the south. Took us about 10 hours to get here last Saturday. So this is where we work on the YAG campus of the University of São Paulo. Some of you have been there back in 2001 as we hosted the International Grassland Congress. A little background and justification for this research. We are known for having the largest commercial bovine herd in the world, amounting to some 200 million head, 85% of which are beef animals. And that's pretty much what a scenario, okay, where's the cursor, there it is, a scenario of our semi-intensive or intensive system would look. Virtually all of that herd is forage-based, with feeding making 15 to 50% of total production costs, and those forages would be mostly, or virtually all of it would be warm season grasses, mainly the brachiarias and the panicum, both African introduced species in our environment. And we have, as on average, low performance indices such as animal daily gain and stocking rates. And that's mainly due to soil fertility constraints. Our dairy industry is also working below or under what it can work, with 35 million head of cattle producing an average of 1,700 kilos of milk per cow per year, with 50 to 60% of total production costs represented by feeding. Base diet is also warm season grasses, brachiarias and panicums and some panicetums. And in the dry season, we would go for corn silage, but you know, usually too expensive, and mostly sugar cane, and then we have to deal with the ethanol industry as well. Our classic constraints for animal production in the tropics, I'm sure many of you have already read about this in textbooks, and those include low forage quality, low forage quantity, mainly during the dry season, and there's a poor use of available technology. I mean, we do have a technology, but due to cost and not lack of communication, people think they're doing the right thing, and many times, and often they're not. But overall, there's been an increasing level of agreement that there seems to be considerable room for improvement in the management of those tropical species, as most of them are underutilized, with large amounts of material that is produced, a lot of carbon that is fixed, and never has a chance to be harvested by the animal or by a sickle bar, and instead it's left to die in the field and it's not converted to beef or milk. And this is what I'm talking about, and I'm going to be detailing this some more as the presentation progresses. There's a lack of weather severity. I mean, our winters are really mild, so we don't need to leave that much stubble to warrant persistence of these grasses. So we often are leaving stubble out there that's not needed for anything. And with increased grazing efficiency, we might improve land use via increased stocking rate without necessarily compromising animal performance. About the exquisite plant, I'm going to talk first about the Marandu cultivar, which is by and large the most widely used forage grass in Brazil. It was released by Embrapa in the mid-80s, and it's expanded now to some 70 million hectares, mainly in central Brazil. This is what a sward of Marandu palisade grass would look, and for a 15 centimeter tall sward, again, you see a lot of material that is grown and it's never harvested, and we wonder why. The Charoes cultivar, and the X sounds like SH in Portuguese, not like a Z, so it was released by Embrapa in 2002. It has spittlebug tolerance. It's a pentaploid, whereas Marandu is a tetraploid. It's 20% more productive as far as forage production. It can give 30% higher reef production. But some of the Embrapa stations are recommending management guidelines that don't sound quite right to us, as initiation of grazing at 4 feet high, and termination at 1 foot. So we were looking at that, and we were wondering, is this the right way to use this grass? And this is what Shara-S looks like in terms of, this stake here has a 15 centimeter mark on it, and you can see a lot of dead material that, again, is never converted to animal product, is never harvested, never has a chance to be harvested. And we wonder how, when, and why did this start to happen? And we all know, we remember all the textbook about the logistic or Gompertz or sigmoid growth curve, and then there's the point where accumulation rates are maximum, and then they start to level off. And because senescence starts to increase, the difference between growth and senescence is zero. So there's not a net accumulation beyond some point. And this is where herbivore genetic accumulation accumulation rate is highest. And we all know that from textbook. John Hodgson published this classic graph where he showed for steady state swards, there's not a lot of variation in net accumulation over a fairly wide range of sward heights and leaf area indices. Braham already showed that at some point in terms of leaf area index, increase in dry matter leveled off asymptotically, and that corresponded to somewhere near 95% interception of incoming radiation. And he stated that maximum growth rates were achieved and sustained when there was enough foliage to intercept almost all incoming light. Quartey and co-workers in 1982 used that 95% as a treatment variable on a perennial red grass and white clover stand, and found out that during the summer, the higher frequency resulted in higher accumulation and in vegetative swards harvesting at 95% LI maximized yield. Back home, Carnevale worked with Mombasa guinea grass, and she also showed that beyond 95% LI, there was a decrease in leaf accumulation and an increase in stem and senescing material in the forage. So we developed a hypothesis for the Shara-S palisade grass, where we wanted to answer a few questions, including is yield maximized if the crop is always harvested at 95% LI? What happens beyond that point? Is there another more practical management guideline that can be translated to LI? Of course, the farmer does not have one of those light probes. He can manage pastures like that. And what happens if the pasture is managed on a calendar basis as we normally do? Do those current management recommendations for this new grass make sense? We worked with three treatments that were three intermittent defoliation schedules that was called strategies. One of them was a pastures that were grazed every 28 days regardless of sward condition. The other one was whenever canopy LI reached 95% regardless of the number of days that it took to get there. And the other one, whenever canopy light interception reached almost 100%, that could not be reached in practice, but almost 100% LI, regardless of number of days that it would take to get there. It was a mob grazing study during 153 summer days in Piracicaba, and this was actually an on-campus experiment, so we had to move animals across, paved streets and all. This is what an experimental unit would look like during data collection, during grazing. Completely randomized design. We didn't want to lose degrees of freedom for blocks, so we decided to go, and the area was fairly homogeneous, so we decided to go for the CR design, three reps. We measured herbage mass and accumulation pre and post graze. We measured sward height, LAI, and LI pre and post graze using the LAI 2000. Plant part composition in strata. There's young Bruno there harvesting his palisade grass. In fact, he's sitting right there. We also measured leaf photosynthesis, and Bruno had a poster yesterday about this. Bummer if you missed it. And we're going to model canopy assimilation. Bruno's coming to work with Dr. Booty in Florida next year to work on that. We also characterized forage nutrient value and qualitative characteristics. And he monitored two regrowth cycles in mid-season, a spring cycle and a summer cycle, to describe some of the dynamics of those processes. So quickly through the results, in terms of total forage accumulation for the summer, as expected, the longer rest periods gave us more herbage accumulation, almost 23 metric tons per hectare. And then that result, and as that was a result of the longer mean rest periods that were around 32 days for the 100% LI, but the exchange was fewer grazings. When we weighted herbage daily accumulation rates for months, we see that although the rest period was longer for a 100% interval, especially due to high herbage accumulation early in the season, it resulted also in highest accumulation rates. And then, as you see, September and October were the months where we had the highest accumulation rates for all treatments. As far as post-graze herbage mass, that's from ground to 15 centimeter stubble. The 95% line of reception had a 3,300 kilos per hectare, summer higher than spring due to accumulation of dead material in stem. Post-graze herbage mass, pre-graze herbage mass was higher in the 100% LI, fairly constant for the 95% as opposed to the calendar treatment. Percent leaf in pre-graze herbage mass was lowest in the 100%, and it decreased very, very pronouncedly in the 28-day interval. Dead material was lowest in the 95% LI. You see here the dynamics of the second regrowth, and you see here the 95% curves with very little stem and dead. As you plot the 100% curve on top of it, you can see the asymptote, and you can see the increase in stem and dead. And you compare 95 with 28 days, you can also see for 20 days the beginning of the asymptote and the taller swards compared to the 95%. A lot of stem and dead material above 95% for all treatments. A pretty good correlation between light interception and sward height, so we think sward height can be a good practical management tool. Good correlations between light interceptions and leaf area index. And we conclude with that light interception and sward height were well enough associated to allow for the use of height as a practical management guide. The use of light is consistent physiologically as it standardizes, so to speak, the forage that's going to be harvested, but it sure lacks practicity. For that summer, 2005-2006, the 28-day rest was somewhat similar to the 95% LI treatment, but if we think that current published recommendations for management under rotational stocking probably need to be revised. And with that, I'll try to entertain any questions you might have. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.